And I had to very soon orient myself to go to a manufacturer and say, sir, maal de do, main kya bechunga? And
Correct.
so the scale is very different. I think every assumption.
Yeah, so for us it was a very personal struggle. Both my daughters had skin conditions, and then saw it as an opportunity where we could sort of create something for it.
Welcome to the Indian Silicon Valley podcast. I'm your host Jivraj, and we are back with our in-person setup hosting two phenomenal founders today. I'm really glad to be hosting the founders of Mom's Company, Malika Sadani and Mohit Sadani. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Our pleasure.
Glad. I mean, every time I host a consumer founder, I think the pleasure is in knowing that the audience watching would have used and felt the products in some shape or form. So to meet their creators and hear from them is always a pleasure. And so from the other side, I get to do that on their behalf. So as we get started, I think what I want to cover through the next couple of minutes, Mohit and Malika, is not just the journey, but the fact that there's been an entire circle, right, which is very unique and new in the ecosystem today. So maybe we go through and start with the initial parts of the journey, but come to the end and how the exit took place. And in the middle, talk about how the team took shape, what is new, what's going to happen after this.
Sure.
So maybe to get us started, I know the story of how you all started is out there, but I'd love to hear it once more to understand that at a time when starting a brand was not as cool, there were not as many, what was the thesis beyond the initial problem statement? And how did you find the conviction to, of course, leave the McKinsey job after, which was paying a lot, and for you to, you know, tread out as your own founder?
Yeah, so, for us, it was a very personal struggle. Both my daughters had skin conditions, and then saw it as an opportunity where we could sort of create something for it. It was something that I thought I was truly excited about building, and I could take that thing to spend those 12, 14 hours doing, right? And it's very interesting that as first-time founders, you don't think too much,
mm-hmm.
right? Like now when you're thinking about our next business, the conversation is going all the way to the extent of saying, do you think a PE would be interested? And what would be the most lucrative thing for them to be interested in investing in this business, right? We didn't think about PE investments or anything at that point of time. It was just like truly felt very passionate about the topic of what we were building. And then just realized that there was a decent TAM around it, which is very important, right?
Yeah.
And then D2C was that time just about beginning as a conversation. There weren't too many D2C brands, so it was like something you were building firsthand. And I think it was also very interesting because brands were not built, and then we were constantly told by people saying that what are you trying to build? Like you're taking on the big giants who've led on trust because of years of existence.
Absolutely.
And there you're trying to come up and have a conversation saying that, I've just about starting, but in this segment, which has been driven by trust based on years of existence, I'm going to make a mark here, right? So it was something to think about, but then you were like so passionate about what you were looking to build. So it doesn't matter. We'll start and we'll figure out how it goes. So I often tell everybody right now, right? Like the hardest thing to do while you're beginning to start up is actually showing up on that day one. And once you start, you will figure everything around it. And that's exactly what happened with us at the Mom School.
Got it. No, that's very interesting to mention. This not knowing too much, right? Like, what were these things which are unknowns that you figured around the way? Maybe talk about a couple of these firsts that you had to figure out from scratch, right? Like, that you had no idea about, but then just understood along the way.
I think the interesting question would be, what did you know about?
Yeah, I was just thinking about it. Like, I have no answer to what you said.
Everything was a start.
Everything.
Also, because for us, going back, right, we came at this saying, Malika identified a need from what we were facing. She spoke to 200 moms. Everyone faced something around baby. Mm-hmm. We need better products. And I came from this worldview where I had done McKinsey. And so I was helping massive companies optimize, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And I had to very soon orient myself to go to a manufacturer and say, sir, maal de do, main kya bechunga? So the scale is very different. I think every assumption that I had because of working with consumer goods, for let's say 2-3 years in McKinsey, I had to let go of every single assumption and restart. Right, so I think we entered without knowing anything. What helped was very quick. Actually, maybe that was a benefit because we came in very open that our ideas are wrong, and so very quick to reason. Mm-hmm. Right? So I think what changed for us was we reached out to people constantly. We second-guessed all the decisions we made, at least in the first 1 year, to make sure we correct ourselves quickly.
Yeah.
But initial base knowledge was very close to zero.
Yeah, but I think, just to add to Mohit's point, right? Like, what we had to our advantage was enough connections.
Yeah.
Right? So when we decided to build the brand and we realized that brand's going to be the core of what we are building, we got Shripad on board as a mentor, right? We got like a fantastic brand agency to come on board, and all of them worked with us because of the connects that we had. So I think network that you build before or during what you're building as an entrepreneur is extremely important, because that just opens ways for you to get stuff started. You know, for us, I think what we had a little bit idea about was online, because Mohit had worked in Snapdeal before, right? So that was something we were aware of. But the basic and the core of how do you build a brand, you know, how do you sort of build a product, even something as saying that what does SAFE mean in product development. Everything was very new for us. But just because of the network that we had, we got connected to like the best toxicologists across the globe. You know, we spoke to guys in Singapore to figure out, please explain what SAFE means. So I think we just leveraged a lot on that, reached out a lot to people. To get our answers, and we did not just shy away from saying that, okay, I don't know this, please explain it to me, because you know I really need to build something which is truly great, and hence I need help in building it up. So I think asking for help and building a strong network was what got us to learn everything about the product. I remember, in fact, when we were fundraising for the first time, and our investors had flown in this guy who was a head of R&D from a very well-known big firm, right? And he came in the end of the whole due diligence, he asked us a question saying, so where did you do your cosmetology from? And I actually answered and I said, I haven't studied cosmetology, I'm an engineer in MBA. And he was like, are you serious? And like, okay, like this, the depth of conversations were just so large, but it was all on-job training and on-job learning.
Got it. Well, that's phenomenal to hear. One interesting thing to pick up from there is, you know, maybe this bar of excellence, right, that you strive to build the best product out there or just give the best to the consumer. That's one. And you didn't have any comparables at the time. So the bar of excellence is mostly like self-initiated. Talk to us about how did you evaluate your own performance? What kept you going in that drive, right? Because there you don't have a benchmark that, okay, this is what the other brand is doing, I have to do this much as well. So what was that feedback cycle like? What was those comparables like?
So we didn't have Indian benchmarks because that was something we were trying to break and give better off, right? But globally, there were enough brands that were creating a lot of stuff from a field textual perspective, just to start off with, right? So at that point of time, everything that was natural or Ayurvedic meant that it will not feel that great. It might not smell that great.
And it'll come in this very boring brown packaging.
Brown packaging, right? And I think globally, we had seen stuff which was very different. Like natural products were efficacious. Natural products felt great to use. Natural products were also smelling fine, right? And all those ticks were there. So the whole idea was to build something that is still natural, but ticks up on all those buckets as well, right? So that was a large part of went in. So I think about 80% of our work just went in sampling. And there's a joke that we have, you know, like I'm doing up my home right now. And, you know, for our bathroom, I was telling the lady that, you know, this is, I need a lot of shelves or storage or stuff. And she was like, how much stuff could you need? So I said, okay, I'm going to send you a picture of what my current shelf looks like, you know.
Just for shock value, I'm going to actually send you the photo to put into the edit.
It was like a huge space. And she was like, what do you do with this, you know? And I was like, listen, this is my business, you know. I'm like so passionate about trying out. So we tried a lot. And then from there, we picked up stuff that we and the team currently liked, got something built around it, and then went to the cycle of consumer feedbacks. So very rarely was it that we got feedback from the consumer. And what was interesting was that every feedback we got was led by, this is too heavy for the Indian summer. You know, this just smells very little fragrance in it. Can we please up the fragrance? So a large part of it was not on the product performance, but was on the feel that different countries have very different of, right? Depending on where you're from and what your climate is. So that was what went on. But a lot of research went pre to starting out.
And I think we linked that very closely to the ethos of the company, right? Going back, the reason we started was we said, moms deserve better products. And I think inherently that was the bar that we kept, saying if we can make a better product within this affordability price range, then why shouldn't we? Why should we do with a third grade product, right? So constantly you would see that across how we dealt with the website, customer experience, product. It was always put mom first. That's actually the number one value company-wide. And that went down to the product range, right? So why we said, okay, the first versions of doing the best for moms was actually get the best from the world and recreate it in India. And then very soon we realized, shit, this is either too heavy or not fragranced enough or so on. So we said, okay, for the Indian mom, actually, we will set the standard of what the best will be. And yeah, that's the process and a journey we did over time.
You know, in fact, product was so important. The hiring pitch for Mohit was, I said, I tried to say, okay, come, I think it's a great opportunity and all of it. So first he told me to draw some charts.
Yeah.
You know, as business plans. And I very quickly said, I'm not doing this bullshit, right? Like, literally, like, McKinsey training.
Yeah, she's like, now that's your job. You do the presentations.
I'm not doing this, right? Like, I like building. And then he said, okay, fine. Then I have one criteria of joining, which is that if what you make is what you're going to use, right? And we're never going to import a product again for our children and for yourself. Then I will switch my job. So actually, the hiring criteria was based on product development for us.
That's lovely. Now, I think goes to show the kind of depth that was very evident, and that shows with the brand that you've built now. And I love the passion. I think this is a story that I think I've heard briefly on the podcast that you all are running. And maybe this is a good time to dive deep there, right? We've spoken briefly about the journey that was initially done. But coming to present day, now you've had Nexit, one of the largest in the country when it comes to consumer brands. There is vivid presence amongst consumers where it is, you know, established of a brand that stands out. And you've now built that, exited it with a corpus which is not just representative of the wealth creation, but also representative of the impact that you've built. And now you're doing some very interesting things. You're doing content, you're investing. Let's come to the content piece. How did that come about, right? Like, I mean, there are so many things you could be doing, but you've now chosen the pathway of starting your own content piece, which is great. I love the episodes I've seen. I will accept I've seen 2 out of the 4 long form contents and all the reels, right, which are great. How did that idea come about? What are you thinking with it? How's that going?
So this time it was the other way around, that I actually managed to not hire Malika, but convince her to please give a little bit of the time to the podcast. The 2-3 things, right? One was, as I thought about how do we continue to have an impact in the world beyond the products we've created, I'd started spending through the last 1 year some time visiting various entrepreneurship conclaves. And my most eye-opening one was when I went to Patna, right? So I got invited there by a mentor and a colleague to come in. And I still vividly remember me sitting on the judging panel or on the speaking panel in an auditorium facing 1,000 students, right? And 1,000 entrepreneurs. And when we walked out, for us to leave the auditorium, it took 1 hour. Because we were answering rapid-fire questions, right? Everything from, mujhe restaurant khulna hai, how do I hire, how do I start? So that was my moment of, you know, Malika and I could figure this out very quickly because we had that network. I think 99% of entrepreneurs don't have that privilege. So really, the podcast became a way of, can we help answer basic questions, right? And really unlock entrepreneurship and make it accessible. There's a lot of answers where if you hear it in 30 seconds, it will click and you remember it. But figuring out yourself will take a month, right? So that was one thing in a sense of giving back. Can we really have meaningful impact? And which is why we're focusing on the reels, which are all simple questions that get answered and hopefully shared around. So that's one part of, can we give back? Second, again, I think what's happening in the entrepreneurship ecosystem, again, in that theme of making it accessible, we've almost created celebrity status for entrepreneurs, right? And if you go back to the guy in Patna, he'll say, shit, this is out of reach. I cannot be that person. And hopefully with the access we have and the people we have and friends, as you see guests coming onto the podcast, you'll see it becoming much more a conversation between friends, right? We're all people who did well for ourselves, but also got lucky. We're just like you, right? So hopefully we start to change that mindset a little bit. That's the second bit. Third is, I thought Malika would really miss working with me. So I wanted to give her the opportunity to not miss it. So, yeah. Nice. And especially it shocked me because in the first podcast, she said if we hadn't worked together, then she would have divorced me. Right? And it came as a shock to me, but now I'm thankful for the podcast because that's lesser reason. I think we have to continue working with each other to keep the semblance of the marriage alive.
Lovely.
No, I think for me it was slightly different, right? Like, so a lot of points Moses covered, right? But I think, so through the course of the Moms Corps, I've tried to help a lot of entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs that reach, right? I was a part of the ISB's Shadow a CEO program, where we would take someone, one person, and kind of train them through month and a half. You know, so, and I thought India is on that verge where, you know, becoming an entrepreneur is cool, and risk-taking ability has really gone up amongst the younger generation, right? Like, they're not growing up to say that, okay, what is that first salary that you get out of campus? That's not the conversation that is there. Like, if you don't have that first salary, but you kind of have that opportunity to start something of your own, that's also looking great as, right? I just read somewhere saying that, you know, we think we have arrived because any mom's happy to get their daughter married to a guy who says, "Main to startup chalata hoon." Right? So I think we're in that verge where we're seeing a lot of it. And lots of startups just die because of lack of access.
Right?
Like, I just don't know. I just did not know.
Absolutely.
And a lot of it is not just on how do I start my company. If you Google search, you will get it. You will get 2-4 CAs, lawyers, you will get the answer, right? The question that is there is slightly more deep dive than saying that, you know, here is a guy, and this is what we addressed in our last podcast, and this is, here's the guy that I don't want him to leave the company, but he really wants to go. Like, how do I manage a situation like that? Because if he leaves, it's going to have business impact. So what do you do in those scenarios? And I think there, a Google search doesn't really give you an answer as much as what a personal experience would, right? And depending on the individual, you would probably like it or not. And I think the best part for us on the podcast is that Mohit and I don't agree on anything. So we've had such different opinions.
There's a minute there, like, on the podcast on this.
Like, it's like, it was just like diverse. We were doing a podcast where someone's asking, saying, how do you manage, you know, disagreements in your talk team? And he's saying, he gives a full gyan on how to manage it. And I go, like, why do you have to manage it? You know, like, it's good, it's great for the business. So I think people get both perspectives of us as individuals. And we're also personally realizing that we are very different. So we ran the same company amicably. But but we have very different set of opinions on a large number of topics.
As we extend, what you start to see at Unscripted is guests where we have conversations, but also this format where we're taking questions from people and answering them, right? So the last two episodes were Q&As.
Exactly.
And really, it's as we went through it, we realized there is no right answer. And it's easy for other founders to just get lost in getting the right answer for yourself. But really, it is Unscripted and there is no right answer. Hopefully, the podcast helps you at least understand the different perspectives, take quick decisions and move on.
Absolutely. I love that. I think as a consumer, I can testify that it feels so organic, natural, right? It feels just literally unscripted because we can see the original cells, and learning and understanding from founders who've been there, done that, is the next frontier of where the ecosystem is at, right? Now we have successes like yours to look forward to see, and there's proof, right, that this has happened and this is achievable. This does not have to seem far, right? This does not have to seem very cod-like or like, you know, pedestrian. It actually is achievable, and I think that becomes possible. What I'm curious to know, as somebody who hosts a podcast myself, is how much of that, what's the behind the scenes like, right? Like, how much do you prep? Like, what's the process to get to that end outcome that I get to see as a viewer? If you maybe can talk about that, and how challenging is it to actually be your vulnerable selves, right? Because there are things about looking back that are probably not some things you want to share. Like, there are stories that you've ended up sharing about not being able to pay school fees of your children, which is so intimate in nature. Talk to us about that process, maybe.
You know, I think, you know, while... So, first question was, how much time does it take? It doesn't honestly take too much time, because the whole format for Unscripted is that the people who are helping us do it give us the questions 5 minutes before the podcast starts, actually. So there is no prep that goes on it. I think a large part of prep will start once we start hosting guests, because that's when we figure out what's a deep dive of question or a topic that we want to do on. But right now, because it's just us and sharing our experiences, there's absolutely nothing. In fact, by format, as I said, we get the questions 5 minutes in advance. They're sitting on the table and say, this is what you're addressing. But, you know, I think it's a great space, because that's what builds on the authenticity. And I think we've reached a stage where once you've achieved something, to look back and talk about, you know, the failures, or not really the failures, but the struggles that you had, is not very hard, right? Like, a hard
It doesn't hit you emotionally, because it's a little, we were there, it's not pure.
And I think also what happens is, right, like, while you're building, a large part of what an entrepreneur is always doing is that they have this facade in front of them that everything is just awesome.
Yeah.
Right? Because there is no point in time that you could look sad about whatever you're building, because then your team would get demotivated, you won't be able to fundraise. The world around is constantly thinking about whether you're doing well or not, right? So there's constantly a facade which disallows you from having these conversations that I couldn't pay my school fees for my child or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But once it's all done, and once your company becomes successful, it becomes easier to talk about that. And I think it's important to talk about that, because these are the moments in which someone would give up and say it's not worth it anymore, right?
Yeah.
So to say that, yes, you know, I just read this beautiful quote the other day saying that, you know, if everything is going against you, you must remember that a plane takes off only against the wind, right? So it is, you don't have to shut. You don't, like, once you know there is a pathway and where you're going and what you're building, I think it'll all be fine. We've all seen that. Not just that, like, there was an episode which we did and which the team kind of glamorized by saying that we had torn soles.
Chappal.
Literally, I think they recorded and they said as this, chappalon ki soul gis
gayi.
But it's not a joke. It was true. I remember how excited I got about a clean washroom 2 years into running the business, because all manufacturing plants don't have a great washroom to use, right? And a large part of my time just went there.
Yeah.
So I think there were all things that now, honestly, you can talk about, you know, in a very different stride than what probably if we had to do this 3 years back and talk about it, maybe there would have been hesitance. But right now, the whole idea of the podcast is to give back and to help.
And to be real.
So I don't think, it's not been hard to acknowledge and accept all of this.
Yeah, I think that helps. Also, I'd say a little bit of personality. Malika says one of my problems in life is I don't give a shit what people think.
Yeah.
Right? That was one of the reasons I was able to choose entrepreneurship over McKinsey. Mm. Right? At that time when it wasn't cool. Like I had tons of people telling me, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
Right? And for some reason I've always had this internal locus of what's right and what's to be done. And at this moment of time I feel it's right to be honest and de-glamorize entrepreneurship, because there's another word that's really glamorizing it. We all go through shit. Every entrepreneur, every founder has had tough times. We are not what you see of us on TV and panels and, you know, in the fancy settings, right? And so if again, as an entrepreneur sitting in Patna, you look at that and you see, ye toh meri zindagi hai, then hopefully that's what I want you to take away.
Absolutely. Talk to us more about that internal compass or the principles that you're talking about. What are some other things that you live by that guide your direction in life?
One is a very clear no regret policy. Mm-hmm. And I generally believe that the Mohit of the past who took that decision was smart enough, given the circumstances, took the right decision.
Yeah.
So there's no point being beating on him.
Yeah.
Right? So have no regrets. Mm-hmm. And I think the second big policy that I've adopted over the last 2 years, actually since exit and so on, is you really need to work as hard as possible to get as lucky as possible, but there's a huge chance of luck that happens.
Yeah.
So our situation was unique, right? We ended up taking a lot of decisions, getting us to a point of the brand where four or five suitors effectively really wanted. But there's so much of the external environment, the funding that was going on, the asks that were being asked of FMCG and D2C brands that allowed the exit to happen.
Yeah.
If not, we would be in a very different situation today as a brand and a company and as founders, right? So where you end up in life is so correlated to luck and how external environment outside of your control plays out.
Yeah.
Your best job or your only job is to make sure that you're maximizing opportunity and luck. Right, so those two, right? Have no regrets for decisions in the past and try and get lucky.
How do you do that? Try and get lucky part?
Put yourself out there.
Okay.
Right. Personally, this is my thesis. The more I figured I spend time out meeting people and having connections, the more I learn and the more opportunities I create for myself. Right? So, but that's my mantra. I think there are other people who I've met for whom it is actually, I spend so much time outside. If I do these 3-4 hours by myself over the week, this is really my time to think and ideate, and it figures. So I think everybody has a different point or a different way of creating luck and opportunity for themselves.
Yeah.
The sooner in life you figure out what that is for you and you optimize for that, I think you just get better at it, right? You get luckier.
Yeah.
You're what, 19 now?
No, I'm
24. 24, oh my God. See, and hosting a podcast and angel investing. You've made it happen, right, for yourself. And yeah. we've had chats about it in the past. Yeah. It's not come... If you had been in Calcutta, right, which we assume is where no startup world happens, I think you're constantly out there. I've seen you in every forum, right, and keeping in touch with amazing people. And that's how luck is happening for you. That's how your investments are happening. That's how your podcast is happening. You're making it happen. I think it's exciting where you'll be when you're at our age. Right? we probably started on that journey quite late in life.
I'm very glad for the support and the kind words, but I completely agree. I think my last 3-4 years have been a testament to putting myself out there and maybe just making luck happen. A lot of that for me was not by design. It was by chance. But now that I've identified this pathway, I know what I want to do forward looking, right? Yeah. And I can now figure that piece out. But amazing point to mention. I think it's very understated to understand the importance of luck and then maybe figure out how you want to leverage it at some point, right? Yeah. Because you can't like manufacture it, but you can figure out a pathway that optimizes for it, if not anything else.
Yeah.
And I think I have the ability to take a chance on it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so when we were going through our exit, and as Mohit said, then we had all the term sheets, right?
Yeah.
There was an internal divide on whether to sell or not to sell.
Yeah.
Right? Both were there now. Everybody kept saying that the winter is coming, the winter is coming, the winter is coming.
Mm-hmm.
It was known to everybody at that point of time, right? The funding will become scarce, it will become harder. But it hadn't at that point of time, honestly, become harder.
Right? Yeah.
So it was still there, we were still getting funded. We also had an option to sort of raise funds and do the next round, right? But at that point of time, just sitting back and taking a chance on this as an opportunity and not something else, just because you weighed the odds, was also important. And I think that he does a very good job of. And I think from what he said, right, like, he has never been driven by external validation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's insanely impressive that he just doesn't care a fuck about what people think about him.
Yeah.
You know, and it is shocking. So then for him, it wasn't that, well, everybody, what will they think about your exit? What will happen? All at that point of time, the thing that mattered and what was important was creating wealth for everyone who's involved in the business. The investors, the employees, for us, and having never to have think about money in life. And you know, it's a thing which not too many people know, that while we got married, and this isn't the first year of us after having gotten married, that my dad and Mohit were having a drink, right? And over the drink, Mohit told my father, he's like, so what's your life plan? How long will McKinsey go on for? Like, it's a fab job, this and that, right? And he said, no, I'm going to retire at 40. And he said, what will you do? He said, this is the amount of money I have in my bank account, and this is when I'm going to retire. And, you know, so everything finished. And my dad's retired in general in the army. So he remembers things. He kind of absorbs things very quickly. The next day he comes to me and says, tere pati ne kal bahut pee li thi. Bahut pee li thi, man. And this is what he has told me, you know, like, and that was it. And everybody, of course, forgot about it because it was taken as a joke at that point of time and everybody moved on in life, right?
Except him and me.
I remember the number. You never brought it up. And
what was the number?
It's a decent number which we crossed.
Yeah, which we crossed. Nice. And the thing was, you know, that and when the exit was happening and while the conversations were happening, my parents were living with me because my mom was unwell.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept like quiet about the whole thing, saw the whole journey happen. And in the end, when the papers got signed, he came to me and he said, "Tere pati ne mujhe bola tha itne saal pehle that he will hit this number by the time he is 40, and he's just done it." So I thought, and I remember there was some conversation that happened. So what I did was I actually walked back to Mohit and I said, this is the conversation you've done with Dad. He said, yes, this was the number I told him.
Yeah. No, this is something new which Madhika doesn't remember. In between those 8 years, her dad and me had one more conversation, which was when I was leaving Snapdeal at that time. So McKinsey and Snapdeal, and then I was leaving. We were deciding to start. And then... during that, I think either leaving McKinsey or Snapdeal, the conversation happened. And her dad said, it's a fantastic job. Why are you leaving? And I said, if I continue this job, I cannot reach the number of 40. The only way to do that, if I start up, Madhika has a fantastic idea. I think we can make a big business out of it. Karke dekhte. So there was a throwback to that conversation in between.
In the middle.
Yeah.
That's lovely. I think very, very interesting. I think this is a very interesting chain of thought. The fact about early retirement, right? I don't think it's spoken of enough as much, especially amongst founders. Also, I think there's this, I don't know how to put this, but around wealth creation for founders, there's this saying that that shouldn't be the final goal, right? Yeah. It can't be the singular goal of why you start up, right? Talk to us about maybe these concepts, right? What does wealth generation mean as founders for you now that you're in a position where you've seen a successful exit? And how did you come across this early retirement plan? What was the thought process
early
like? And what planted that thought in your head? And how did you kind of like work towards it?
No, I think it's very interesting that what wealth generation does for you, it just buys you freedom.
Yeah.
And buys you freedom to experiment, freedom of time, and freedom to just choose what you want to do in life. Right? And that in itself is very empowering.
Yeah.
You know, because I was having a conversation with someone else and while we're thinking and articulating on what our next business idea should be, right? The risk-taking appetite that we have is so high right now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're not looking at this giving you a salary or running your house, right? So you will go all in to just build something which could potentially be really, really large, right?
Yeah.
Because the risk-taking ability is very different. When you're running a startup and you're figuring out how to run the house on a monthly basis, there is an added amount of pressure that you build onto it, right?
No.
So which should go on? Now, in our case, wealth generation came from a complete exit. In certain cases, it could also come from your ESOP sale or your stock share sales, right? At a constant period of time, like you could sell your stake and keep doing that. But I think if I have to tell founders, I would just tell them that please make sure that you don't have to worry about how will you pay the check. I still remember the day when we had to ask my father to pay the bill for the daughters.
Yeah.
It was really, really hard. I remember calling our investors and saying, it's about time we start taking the salary from the company, you know, because this is not how...
It's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable, right? Like there will be a point in time where we'll be like, it's not worth it because the opportunity cost of having doing or getting a salaried job and making that money is of course available to you, right?
Correct.
So you don't want to not build something great just because of the fact that, you know, your monthly check is sort of important. But I think now that wealth creation is done, you can choose where to spend what time on, right? Like what gives you true joy in life, you know? Like there was this thing that Mohit and I were discussing the other day and he was actually telling me about, saying that draw your calendar and create heat maps in it. As green as everything that energizes you and red that everything that de-energizes you, right? And now you can choose to have a lot more greens over red, which you cannot do in the other course of time. So I think that's what it allows you to do.
Absolutely.
It's changed a bit. So the, I think early idea of retirement for me was to do nothing. And very soon I realized I'm not built like that.
Mm-hmm.
So now I modified that idea to do what I really choose to do.
Mm.
Right? Which is very different. Like Malika said, when you don't have to worry about bills to pay.
Yeah.
And we haven't massively upgraded lifestyle. Like it's very hard for us to spend extra on a day-to-day basis. I think what that sense of retirement has given is it's given us the freedom to say, okay, we will now do some investing and spend time and be open about spending time because the cost of my time is very low right now. Do the podcast and actually spend our own money on the podcast because I think it is hopefully for, if I can impact 10 people, then I've been in service to them, right? So allowed us to do that. I am on the personal side, doing things on my bucket list, which I didn't do for very, very long because I was 100% in the business. And allows me to do that while I have my health and body and mental facilities intact, right? And not when I'm 70. So I've done scuba diving and skydiving. There's a bunch of stuff I want to do.
Yeah.
But really optimize for stuff that gives you joy and a sense of purpose, where hopefully what you create for the world is far beyond around paying your electricity bill.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the intent. I think it's very early days. We're literally like, what, 3 weeks after a full exit.
Yeah.
Right? So it's really early days. I think we're figuring this out.
Yeah.
It's going to take time. But really the two core principles I'm adopting is how do I have the highest amount of impact?
Mm-hmm.
And second is, can I do it in a way where it is very energizing and meaningful for me? Right?
Yeah.
Because then I know I just end up doing more of it.
Absolutely. awesome. I think we started with the podcast as a line of questioning and ended to a lot of depth in terms of just thinking mechanisms and what wealth does to you. I think wealth as a mechanism for just buying freedom, time, control of your own life is a very interesting concept. We spoke about the exit.
Can I add on to that? Yes. I think this is really important. Someone asked me recently, right, how much money is enough?
Yeah.
That's really interesting. And we actually landed on an interesting space where we said, it's not how much money is enough, because you can always upgrade your lifestyle to overtake whatever money you have in the bank.
Correct.
If you make billions of dollars and then go buy yachts with billions of dollars and they sink, you lost all the money, right? So I think one of the concepts we keep thinking of and people keep reiterating is our wealth. Mm-hmm. Combining that with, I think, our startup gyan a little bit, we landed on an interesting concept of what you really want is not wealth, but what you want is infinite time. Hmm. Right? And that infinite time is, if you have 1 lakh in your bank account, but you spend a rupee a day, you have infinite time.
Interesting.
Right? So I know we talk a lot about wealth and so on, but it's not really wealth. What you want is, if I had no salary coming home, as an example, how much time would I have before the money runs out? Right? So that's an interesting way to think about it, because the other way to have infinite wealth effectively or infinite time is to just not upgrade your lifestyle as much. And you may still be out there and go out and have amazing impact. And so
interesting food.
Every number can be not enough and every number can be enough.
Yeah.
Very cool. I think that's something to think more about as I absorb it. But good observation. I think there's an interesting conversation between Kunal Shah and Nitin Kamath on this exact topic, where very briefly they talk about this number. I think globally it was I think in the US it's like 50 million. That's like, you know, a life after which you can live something luxuriously. That's the limit. And in India they say it's around 10, 12 million. So that was an interesting data point to know that, okay, beyond that, you buy freedom to what you want to do on a day-to-day basis. But I think a good equivalent beyond the numbers is that qualitative assessment. Yeah.
No, but that number is also based on, so even we did that calculation. Okay. So, and we were also told that number.
Yeah.
And the number is based on your quality of living staying the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So and it's a luxury quality of living.
Yeah. It's still the same, and then you're not spending anything more and all of that, right?
Yeah.
Because I think what you cannot let go of your upbringing, right? So what you found expensive, even after you get money, you will find it expensive.
Exactly.
I think the only thing it buys you the ease of is saying that you're not like going to 5 shops to figure out what your child's return gift should look like.
Yeah.
You go to one, pick up everything and come back, because value of time is far more than that little, you know, little differential amount that you'll be paying on. So that's what it does.
So I read an interesting story. Like I said, we're doing up a house, and yesterday was a super exciting day for us because we had to buy lights.
Yeah.
And Madhika and I figured out the website. Malika chatted with the guy, figured out he has a warehouse on North Delhi. We drove 2 hours to North Delhi, sitting in the warehouse with all of his stuff, and we're saying, look at how much margin we are saving.
And we
came back like beaming, saying, yes.
I think the funny part of it is, you know, so my designer was like in a state of shock that you've firstly gone to a warehouse when I take you to all these fancy showrooms to select your lights and you choose to go there. And the second thing was, you know, we just realized that, but it gave us a lot of joy.
Yeah.
It did give us a lot of joy, right? Like figuring out then, this bhaiya laga ke, on kar doge, ab on kar doge. And he's like switching it on. And he also towards the end must have found it. It was very interesting that, you know, that's the power of entrepreneurship as well, right? So while we were there and we were having a conversation, so one of his friends came in. He was looking to build something in the space of skincare. So he says, so what do you do? He said, we ran this company called The Mom's Company. The conversation just changed.
Yeah.
You know, the conversation just changed.
I can imagine.
And the reason why we went there was because you don't lose the value for money, right? There was no return policy. On lights. I'm like, I don't know what quality is, so I have to see it in person, and that's why we drove there, right? And in the end, of course, he said, I'll take it back, you know, if it's not. Because the intent is not to buy and return, but the intent is genuinely if you don't want it, you have to return. But we actually drove all the way to see and be in the warehouse. It was
a fantastic experience. Like, mere andar ka sindh bahut khush hua.
It's so heartwarming to hear it. I can only imagine what it feels like. You know, but goes to show, I mean, like, the wealth is not about the lifestyle, it's more about just time, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the interesting
Absolutely.
part.
Yeah.
and just very lovely to know these stories. Amazing, we've covered like a wide range of things. One interesting thing that I want to understand, and I don't think this has been spoken of enough, as a husband-wife duo running a company and with two children, right? I'm sure you have more time, but what were the days like when you had to navigate the business, scale it up, grow it, and come back home, figure out parenting? What was that journey like, and how did you navigate that bit? Because you've spoken about the money aspect of it and the fact that you were not taking salaries, but what were the qualitative things about not bringing back work a home? I know you've spoken about this briefly on the podcast, but if you can maybe share a couple of, the parenting side of skills when being a founder, and especially together, right? So you have the pressure together, you have the highs together, and you have the parenting together. How do you navigate that?
So when Mohit started and said that I would have divorced him, I think it just stemmed from here. One saying that if we were not doing it together, uh-huh, I would have never understood his part of the story. Uh-huh. And then expected him to do X, Y, Z, right? And he would have obviously not been in the mind space to do it. And hence created a little bit of a difference between us. Now, whether we would have divorced or not is a different question. But yes, there was a potential of that happening, right? Wow. But I think, working together just gave us a lot more understanding of what was going on in your head at that point of time, right? It just told you, you knew what the day was, right, what the hard parts of the day was, right? And there are a lot of times when you can't put those in words. Mm-hmm. They have to be just understood. And as a partner, you tend to sort of understand it much more closely, right? So there were days when I could just not have a conversation with Myra and Saina, because if I did, I would sort of flash out. Right, because there was so much built up from where it happened, and there's a lot of times that you cannot react, right? So then Mohit would be like, okay, let's give Mama some time. Let her be by herself at that point of time, right? There would be days when he would be working till like really late because of something. Mm-hmm. And the girls would just come back and say, Papa's not spoken to us today. And I could sort of explain it to them on why it was not, right? So our daughters have actually grown up with very different set of values, right? Mm-hmm. I think the one thing that they have seen and learned is the importance of hard work. Mm-hmm. I don't think we would have been able to show them that or train them on that, right? And the fact that hard work can play, right? But it's important to take your chances in life, right? It's important to take the risk. We're doing up their home, and one of the courts that we are exploring for their bedroom, and we're toiling between two, which is one telling them strong, fearless, powerful. And the other one is that you lose every chance you don't take. You lose every opportunity you don't take, right?
Yeah.
And those are the two that we're thinking about. So they've grown up in an environment where they understand what these mean.
Yeah.
We weren't available to them 100%. There was a point in time to very honestly accept, I did not know what section my daughter was in. It was not there. Yeah. So I went and stood outside the class to pick up my child, and I was outside like 2E, and she wasn't in 2E, but she was in 2B, and from there she said, Mama, I'm here. And I was like, yeah. I felt so bad about that, yeah. But it didn't really matter. So I think what we learned during the course was that whatever matters, let that be important. What doesn't matter, and if we don't land up doing that, it's okay, right? So if I'm not there to pick them up from their school bus, it's okay. But not taking them out and spending some time with them through the day or through the week is unacceptable. So I think we created our own parenting playbook, which was meant for the startup that we were running, right? Yeah. So, and that, I think that was what was different. I remember my daughter, it's really funny. So one day Ash, who was one of our investors from Sama, he called me in the evening and he said, "Tum log fundraise karne ki soch rahe ho." And we were like, I was like, yeah, but we're just about thinking. I don't think we've had this conversation with anyone yet. And he said, yeah, okay. I said, but how did you get this? It's an intuition. I said, bullshit. It's not intuition for sure. And then he said that, so my daughter goes to a class, and the lady who runs the class happens to be a friend with him. And then she turned and told him, but my daughter said that, when I'm in 2040,
yeah,
this would be the name of my company, and I would be raising $5 million, which was actually the amount that we were looking to raise at that point of time, right? So wow. Then the conversation they had was like, I think Malika and Mohit are planning to fundraise, because that's Myra's story right now, right? So she's grown up in an environment where she thinks fundraising, she thinks logo, she thinks business,
lovely,
what it takes to take business. And I think those are the lessons that they have learned in life, which I think are valuable in their own aspects, right? But but when they said we want you around, we took time to do that. And I think everyone from the team was super helpful because they were sensitive to it and they kind of acknowledged it. So we told people beyond the point that, you know, from 7:30 to 9:30, we will not be available. Please feel free to call us after 9:30 anytime. Yeah. And they were okay. You know, so it's easy. I think it's sometimes about just voicing what you need as well to make this successful.
Yeah, I think it's also the, over time, we realized that our values around this were fairly similar, right? So both at work, we were, I think we were very obsessive, both of us. So during the days, it was never on 10 to 6. It was all consuming. I'd wake up early morning, she'd work late into the night. But we understood each other that this is really on consuming for both of us. And it means that the choices we make accordingly are different, right? It, I think it would be much harder if I had a fixed 10 to 7 mindset and then I switch off. But she's 100% there, right? So I think that worked well. And what that the flip side was, I think when we got okay saying, listen, we are 100% on this, it doesn't matter if on a Wednesday afternoon we have to go for a PTM, right? That is okay. And we both had the chat and became okay with it. And even further, like Malika said, became okay talking to the team and telling them, guys, we have to do this. Right? That helped. Right? So over time, we just learned that the cadence that really worked for us and the focus that worked. So we like to now call it, we went through a phase of work-life merger because we forgot balance.
Yeah.
Our teams had access to our calendar, and on the calendars, we had PTM for Myra and ballet class and so on during the workdays, and it was fine because we understood that we were 100% for the rest of the time.
And it's so funny, you know, I remember one of the people whom we were doing a call with, she says, your calendar reads ballet class on Saturday. You know, she has ballet on Saturday. It's ballet on Saturday. What does that mean? Like, you will go and drop her, right? And then the class will go on for a period of time. We can chat then. And we were like, yes. So they actually figured times around it. So, okay, how much time do you take to give? Okay, then this much is the time that you're traveling. So you have 45 minutes. We'll chat in those 45 minutes. So actually, we did calls outside them. Getting into PTM, getting out of PTM, there was a chat that was happening because PTMs would typically be running delayed. But I think it was very nice, you know, like, so even when we were sort of leaving, we said we were running the mom's company. We cannot be running a company where parenting is so hard and thought about, right? Like, it has to be okay. So we had lots of people who became parents in front of us, you know, and they had the flexibility. And the fact that they had seen us being okay for going on a Wednesday for a PTM was okay for them as well, right? Yeah. And the fact that we missed a lot of stuff while it was happening also taught them their own lesson, right? Yeah. So the whole team kind of came together to be okay with certain things that you like. But I think what as Mahmood said, right, what is important is core values. We would not miss that. Like, we would never miss a PTM. Yeah. We would never miss their birthday party. Friends' birthday parties are happy to move on, right? So those would not happen. We would cancel meetings, cancel stuff around to be for those moments at that point of time.
Got it. No, that's very, again, very heartening, very thoughtful to understand. And also what's interesting is that there's a sense of shared value system, but difference in approach, which I think forms the ideal combination. That'll be something I'll use. But lovely, I think, again, one part of the spectrum that we've not covered is the exit, right? And I think I'd like to come to that now. Considering that, I think two, three things on this. One is the sentiment in and of itself, right? Exits are not as understood as they need to be. It feels like, you know, it's a brand that you curate, grow with all your heart, with a personal mission, with such a personal story. How do you let go of it? So maybe that's one thing that I'd love to understand more about. And then when you are deciding amongst multiple options, having the privilege to do so, how do you figure out where do you fit best? I know you've spoken again in bits and pieces. I remember that reel on that analogy that, you know, you have to think of it like a marriage, right? Like, once you have to get the child married sometime. So that's one. And you've spoken also around the integration bit where it's culture. But what were the more ingrained behind the scenes conversations when it was happening? So maybe if you can touch upon that. And then how did the team take it, etc., right? So I'm throwing all of these things out so that we can, like, optimize for it. But what was the sentiment like? What was the decision like? And how was it taken? That's the broad spectrum that I'd love to know more about, Mohit and Malika.
So, you know, for us, we'd always thought of acquisition as a path for the bomb score, and everyone from the first investor, we knew about that, right?
Okay.
Having said that, when it came to the time of exit, it was hard. Right? You always know it that it is going to come at some point of time, but when it actually hits you, it is hard. Because I think the mistake, which I'm guilty of making as well, is what we make is that we make ourselves equivalent to the startup. Right, and we start thinking that we don't have an identity outside of this. For me, it was like Momsco is my identity, right? Like I am who it is, right? And if this gets taken away from me, then who am I? Mm-hmm. Right, and that I think is a hard journey to cover, and that's what makes it really hard, right? You've built something very closely, and then someone else starts taking decisions on how the next campaign should look or what the brand new look of packaging should be. It's not an easy decision, right? Because you've always visualized it somewhere. So I don't think exits can be easy, no matter how prepared you are for it. But I think it's very important to realize what is the best for business and for the entire ecosystem around the people who are involved in it, right? Like all the stakeholders, and then take a decision based on that, right? It's very interesting that my younger daughter once asked me when the exit was happening, and she said that, Mama, you always said in all your interviews that Momsco is like your third child, right? And now you're letting the third child go. So what does that mean, that you will let us go as well, right? And it was like a really hard question. My older one's telling her, shut up, don't ask. Like thinking and knowing it's tending towards a little hotter generation. You know, she did say that, right? And I just turned around and I told her, saying that if there is something that I think is better for you in the future, I will let you go for that. So if you have to, there's something really good for you waiting, I'm not going to hold you back to live with me. I'm going to let you go explore the world and do it, right? Which is exactly what we did with the Momsco as well. Hmm. When the exit was happening. So as soon as we found something which kind of generated value for everyone in the ecosystem at the Momsco, and at the point of time, which also found Momsco a great space where someone would be really interested in taking it forward, right? Like for the Good Glam, Momsco is the largest brand that they have acquired, yeah. Right? For everybody else that we had, it was a small brand that they would have acquired and taken on, right? Like these guys would put everything on it to make it grow. So I think we found a very safe home for it. And then it's a journey that you take to accept it and to detach. And that's a hard journey to take, right? Mm. So I remember going through this whole period for 3 to 4 months where I would fight for like everything inside, right? And then coming to a realization that once you've sold it, it's not your decisions to take. It's obviously someone else's decisions to take. It's someone else's large ownership on that, right? Is a journey which every entrepreneur needs to take. And that's hard. But I think what helped me personally was just hearing stories from everyone around it who came back and said, you know, that some people bought homes, some people got a dental clinic opened for their wives, some people had loans which generations had picked up which got repaid back, right? Not there it. Were a few people who've gone ahead to create their own companies because they have enough wealth to not think about that monthly salary, right? That was the only thing I'm holding them at. Brilliant people. But they've decided to do their own startups, right? They are, we have this brilliant guy who comes from really humble backgrounds. And he has the ability, he paid off all loans for the family, got the family a home, and is now beginning and looking at starting his own company, right? There are huge stories to tell people. You know, we just had our farewell, and we said, when people were asking us, how do you want to have your farewell? I told everybody, I want everybody to show up, whoever wants to come and meet Mohit than me, you know? And, and the team just called everybody possible. We had employee number one show up and share their experiences with what Momsco has done in their life, right? So from being an employee at Pigeon to today owning his own factory, right? Running his own formulations lab and having the confidence to do it more than anything else, right? He's a small town guy who's come and done all of it, right? And then he's super confident about what he's building. And I think those were stories that really gave me like a lot of contentment, a lot of happiness to see that, okay, you generated value for everyone who was involved, right? These people took risk on us when there was nothing. Yeah. Right? It was sometimes, in certain cases, we didn't even have a product and a bottle to show most of them, right, at that point of time. But they did take a risk on the two of us. And I think now that we see them in a very different space in life is very exciting to see. In fact, we do very funny because we also had few of the people who made us write saying, I'm going to be your employee number one. So it's XXX001, XXX002 in the company. So I think that is what I found my piece in.
Lovely. That's so, again, heartening to hear that there was a clarity around the process. How was the decision in the specific terms, right? Like, were there a lot of negotiations? What was the first criteria? You spoke about how it was a important thing for Good Plan Group. But beyond that, what were things that maybe you want to strategically share that are important in such a negotiation or just variables to consider when you're making a choice like this?
So the best advice we got was that for any such moment of time in a company's life, what's most important to have far more demand for the company than there is supply, which is one company.
Okay.
Right? So I think for us, we were actually out fundraising, and from a fundraising moved it to an acquisition mandate, mm-hmm. because it was a moment of time when we could actually get 7 people on the table with active conversations, wow. which converted to 5 offers, near offers, term sheets. Right? So I think just from a sale perspective, the best advice I would give is make sure when you start the process, you have the ability to command something because there is competition.
Yeah.
Right? So that's just good negotiation tactics. Once we had that, we actually had a 3-step criteria on who we would actually go ahead with eventually. Mm-hmm. First was, I think I was very clear that the minute we raised VC money, it was our job to give them a multiplied return. Right? They'd taken a bet, starting from angels to VCs, that our job is to return money. If I wanted this to be a family business, I should not have taken external capital. Right? And I think that many founders I speak to don't think of it that way. Right? You can create a fantastic company, but the minute you get external funding, it is your job to return it in some shape and form. Therefore, IPO or acquisition or sale to a larger entity, all of those options have to be on the card. You can't say this is my baby. Right? Those two don't go hand in hand. So criteria one was very clear that investors who have put in money in us get what they need for returning their funds and so on. So that was criteria one. Criteria two for us was, what does this mean for Malika and me individually? Because the other great piece of advice we got was, once you sell, best case for everyone is if you hand over the business as quickly as possible, because the acquiring company then gets the freedom to actually make their plans come to life. Mm-hmm. And you don't feel over time this loss of control. Mm-hmm. Right? So in fact, it was a 2-year time frame at that point of time that we had negotiated. And we had built in flexibility saying, as soon as we both feel the handover is complete, we will actually hand over faster if that's possible. So that second, it made sense just from Malika and my perspective. And the third criteria was, what's best for the brand and the team in the long run. Mm-hmm. And so if I just compare the offers, if versus large FMCG companies as one potential acquirer or GoodGlam, with GoodGlam, we were convinced of 2 things. One is that we would be meaningful revenue for the company overall, and that would mean that we would get resources, talent, money, time and attention as needed to really grow and do the best that's possible for the mom school. We felt that in larger companies, we might be a little lost. Right. Very similarly for our team members, we thought we have fantastic team members in a place, in a space like GoodGlam, which is growing so quickly, we can see them taking on larger central roles. Yeah. And that made sense. So even from a team perspective, and that over time has played out, right? We've seen some of our team members leave because they wanted to pursue other opportunities. But a lot of our team members have gone on to play large, meaningful roles in the central team as well. Right. Again, I think in a larger FMCG context, they would have felt lost. So that was sort of 3-step criteria we focused on. Last, like Malika said, it was, I had a sense from being through a cycle earlier that some sort of shit is hitting the ceiling. Like something's going to break. This amount of exuberance can't last. So my last criteria was, who can get this done quickly? Right? Because the worst case for a company that's up for sale is to be in. Is to be in that mode for very, very long.
Yeah.
It's just so easy for it to go wrong, because if that sale doesn't happen, then you won't raise, or raising money will be much harder because people know you tried to sell, right? So you're sort of a backup option. So that was the fourth interesting criteria of saying, can we just get this done very quickly? And credit to Darpan and the Gurugram team, when we told them we need this done quickly, we literally started talking in August 21. By September, we had a term sheet. By October, we finalized and finished the diligence. And by December, the paperwork was done. So I haven't heard of a deal closing so quickly.
Got it. Awesome. I think that's super insightful when it comes to the process and clarifies a bunch of things. As we conclude this wonderful conversation, I think I'd love to know a bit more on the team side, right? I think I've had the brief pleasure of just seeing very interesting stories, right? And just so much warmth in them, of the farewell, of anything else. Talk to us about how do you build such an ingrained culture. So this one also, you mentioned things like, you know, there was a pass on culture when it comes to parenting, there was flexibility, there was just a bar of excellence, right? And that continues to show because there are a bunch of folks starting up from the team itself. How have you thought about team building as a broad process? And more importantly, considering that there's a lot of uncertainty when building out a brand that doesn't have like proven excellence in, you know, similar sectors or in the country, how do you deal and navigate that and instore belief in others and then have them just follow your conviction till they build their own?
You know, so I don't think we ever interviewed any of our top hires.
Okay.
I think we got interviewed. and we learned very quickly to be okay with it because every interview was a hiring pitch, which we had to make on why you should join in, because we always hired ahead of time. So we always hired people who were accomplished for, more accomplished actually for the size of business that we were running, right? Mm. Which meant that it had to be a convincing pitch for that person to join in.
And this was all from the network?
No.
Okay.
No, it was everything through LinkedIn cold calling, it was through agencies, it was all of it. It was not through network.
Got it.
I think, because what happens is, you cannot have such a wide network at any given point of time that you will find some or the other connect. Yeah. If there was someone we desperately wanted, we would get one of the investors or someone to have a conversation to convince the person saying, you know, like, so instance, when we were initially hiring for marketing, we would get cheaper to have a conversation. So the person feels comfortable saying, chalo, theek hai. It's not under just the whims and fancies of the founder. There is someone else whom I can have a conversation with as well, right? So that was one part of it where, you know, we realized what we were not good at and we were ready to hire super smart people for it, right? And we were not like kind of thinking of saying he'll come and take my position or take my decisions for me. So that was never there. The second part is, I think, to realize that getting good talent is great, but empowering them is harder. Right, because as a founder, you're so obsessive about everything and you're so used to taking all the decisions. You have your team who's constantly used to reaching out to the founder. And then you create a layer below, right? Yeah. And you're expecting everything to be routed through them, for them to be empowered to be able to take the decisions, right? Mm-hmm. So I think learning the art to forgo control and hand it over to someone who's been hired was the second thing that we learned. Mm-hmm. And third, which is super important for us, was making sure that the entire team believes in each other and has trust in each other. You know, what happens is that you will hire some superstars and they will constantly like begin to fight amongst each other, right? And then as a founder, how do you make sure that both of them or the team at large kind of realizes that everyone's working on one common goal? It was very, very important because that's what enables everybody to start performing, right? And I think fourth by the side that we did was we were very sure that the team can't be run by Mohit and me. It cannot be run by the team of SCXOs. It cannot be run by the team leads. It cannot be run by managers, right? The team has to run and the company has to run from every single person who is there, who's the junior most fork to the senior most fork. And making sure everyone in the team is held equally important, right? And how do you build that culture where everyone feels important? Mm-hmm. Is one, of course, having conversations with everyone as far as possible. And the second thing we did was, you know, when the scorecards got built for everyone, everyone had this major part of their scorecard on what is it that they're doing that's impacting the company on a whole, right? So every person in the company felt that what I do is changing the company, what I do is contributing to the growth of the company. And that became very, very important. So everyone in the team felt very empowered to have conversations, you know, and we never had this, we had a very flat organization, right? Where everybody could talk to everyone, everyone could walk in and have any conversation with everyone. Just to build this whole space where all of it just allows free flowing of ideas to come. You know, we realize that the world's changing so quickly, you know, like if you tell me to use 5 different platforms on internet, I'll find it really hard, but my daughter can, right? So if I do not give importance to the graduate from school who has come and been hired for social media, and I don't let them experiment with their ideas, I'm doing actually a disservice to the company myself.
Yeah.
So how do you create an equitable playing ground for everyone, you know, like top down, so that everybody has the right and feels empowered to voice their opinion? And that, I think, changed a lot of what we built at the team. Yeah.
We had a third value in the company. First was put moms first. Third value was make heroes. Hmm. And this actually came up in conversation, interestingly. A chat with one early team member where we concluded that if you look at the journey of any team member in their life, and assume their life is a movie of which they are the hero, right? Can the mom school be the place where they become truly the hero of their life? Mm-hmm. And we said, if you can make somebody else a hero, they will do amazing things for the company. And which is why for Malika and me, it's so meaningful that people have built houses, because for them, it is their life's identity. Singh, maine ghar banaya, apna, right? Maine apni behan ki shaadi karai. For some, it is, I did the best work of my life at the mom's company, right? For some, I've had conversations on the day one when the person joined and he said, in 3 years, I want to start up. And I said, we'll help you prepare for that. And they've gone into startup, right? So it was very clear. I think the correlation we made was, agar maine usko hero banaya, to wo company ko hero banayega. And if you can build that, or at least for us, as we ingrained that more and more into the culture of the company, we saw it happen. Mm-hmm. And then the story started flowing.
You know, it was not just make them hero for life, right? It was that they could contribute now, saying ki mere liye kuch achha hoga. But I think the important part was, even after they had left, they always had very fond memories about it. So if they ever saw anything anywhere, they would send a message. I've had ex-customer care people call back and say, I saw this product lying there at a pharmacy. And there was some conversation that a customer was having standing by the side. And she actually sold the product to the customer. And she's worked with us some 1 year back, right? Based on that. So I think the important idea was to have people leave the company when they leave, saying that, the time in my life which changed my entire career progression happened here. And when that story started building, I think there was a lot of faith that people put in on us in general, saying that, you know, I'm here because my friend said, they started hiring people. Yeah. You know, like our entire design team got built because one guy said that these guys have changed my life, so you must come here. And we had all designers come in and they all leave at a very great point. And every time on their exit interview, they said that I was hired saying that when I join here, my life will change. And my life has changed. So thank you very much. You know, so I think that was the impact that you created. And that was a story that got built on the floor, which got more and more people to be, you know, sort of doing what they're doing. Because I remember there's this lady who's joined us. She joined us as a sales executive for one of our stores in the hospital. She's leaving the company now after 7 years, and she's leaving as the head of customer care for Good Glamour. Right? Wow. So from a business associate and a sales girl, she's heading customer care for the group, and she's taken multiple roles in the middle of doing retail and all of that, right?
Lovely.
But that's the kind of stories that you loved building, and that's the kind of team that you started building. So there was a lot of trust on the floor. Like if you told someone, I want you to do this, it may seem contradictory for them at that point of time, saying that maybe it's not the best for me, but people didn't question. I said, maybe there is something for it, and you know, I see you as a mentor, I see you as a guide, I'll take it on from what you're saying, right? And that really helped, because we were never dealing with employee-related issues. Everybody felt like leaving home and coming here was coming to another space where they felt trusted, they felt believed, where they felt empowered, right? So it was quite nice. Like it was the point in time when after 5 in the office, we had music playing on the floor. You know, it was very different. So, but it was really nice. And I think it's really important because, and especially in a startup, because the kind of requirement that you have, and also as people we are, right, as we said, we forgot about work-life balance. We thought about only integration. And when you're so obsessive about work and you're working with your team till late, like I used to do calls with a few of my designers at 1 a.m. in the morning. Wow. And then they would do it with me. Hmm. But I didn't question them on why you didn't show up at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
The next day, right? And they did it not because they were doing a job.
Yeah.
They did it because they were building something which was very different. And I think it's really important from a startup construct.
Yeah. I think that entire bit is so brilliant to just understand, and any founders listening can, you know, I think that's the aspiration for founders, to build like a strong culture, because eventually boils down to people. And so heartening to hear all that's happened. And I think that as a North Star, the make hero or change your life analogy is just phenomenal from a culture standpoint. Out of curiosity, one thing that I'd love to know is this clarity of thought, which is evident through, you know, letting go, understanding your, you know, problems and things that you're not good at, hiring for them, all of these things that you've mentioned, was it very clear in while you were building, or all of these are more learnings in retrospect, right? Like, how much of this is forward looking? How do you, you know, scale yourself when you are building? How do you build these lessons for yourself when it was happening? I'm guessing now there's a lot of it looking back, right? But how did you do it when you were building?
So, you know, it's very interesting. All of it came while we were building.
Yeah.
Like, both and I never worked together. So, we never knew what he would be good at or what I would be good at as well, right? So, I think a large part of it was we were doing everything and naturally transitioned to taking on stuff which was very different, right? So, I gained my energy by working with people. And the larger the set of people, the more interesting it is for me. Like, I gain energy from external validation, which is why marketing naturally came to me, right? Mohit doesn't need external validation. So fundraise, everything went on his bucket, right? So it was very interesting to see that during the course, we actually saw our personalities take on roles which we had originally not decided on, right? So, for instance, when we started, we thought that HR would report into Mohit because he was into leadership training and a lot of work he'd done in that space in McKinsey. So we thought it's good for him to own HR, you know, and operations also went to him because he did a lot of strategic work in operations. But during the course of building, we realized that we would move these two to me. I started taking on finance initially, and I moved finance to him, you know, because I did not enjoy it as much. Sales was something that I thought I would take on, and then we kind of moved it slightly to him in that course, right? So I think it was during the course, and it took us almost about 2 years, two and a half years to figure out eventually what teams are going to be reporting into me and what teams are going to be reporting into him. And it's very interesting because that was actually the time when we also started hiring really senior folks. So by then they came in, we had clarity on who they would be reporting into. But yes, to answer your question, we had no clue. We had absolutely no clue. That's what I'm saying, right? We didn't think so much when we started the first time. We just do it. And of course, I think it's like a river. You know, it starts flowing.
It flows.
And then the different stones and the different architecture around it kind of starts shaping it in a different fashion altogether. So,
I think we keep joking now in hindsight that Madhika and I don't agree on anything. But now that I think about it, I think that disagreement forced clarity of thought. Because you're disagreeing with your co-founder who's a peer in the business. And if we were both so completely focused that the decision is the right one for the company and the brand, not for you or me, it really forced us to take decisions that are right in that sense. And so, we've had very heated arguments in every room with the team, without the team, late into the night, early in the morning.
And you know, just to be with the team when it happened, the team had no clue on how to react, right? Like, because the two of you fighting. And not actually fighting, but having a very strong argument, very different point of view. And the team, and senior team would be like sitting in the room, waiting, kya karna hai, kya karna hai. Then few of them were like, okay, like guys, like let's just chill. And then, no, wait, I'm having a conversation, like, okay, no, you know? And we had all of those. And then the HR interview. And she came in once and said that, you know, the team wants to know how to deal disagreement
with you guys.
When there's disagreement between the two of you, but work needs to move on. So how does the team decide? Like, you know, like what do we do? And you know, and that's the day when we call the entire team in. So two instances. One was this, and the other, I think, and it'll help all couple founders. Right? One was this, what happens when the two of you disagree on a topic? And the second was that people assume that they will tell Mohit something and Mohit will pass that information on to me.
Yeah.
And then it would be taken care of, right? Yeah. Which did not happen. So what we did was, once this came to our notice, is when we called the entire top team in and we said two things. Please understand that you don't want to be in a position where Mohit and I take in inputs from all of you, go back home, take the decisions and bring them back. Because then there's no point of hiring all of you, right? Yeah. Because you need to be a core part of decision making for whatever we're doing. That's what you're hired for.
Yeah.
So please understand that if you want me to do something, you need to have a conversation with me.
Yeah.
If you want Mohit to do something, you need to have a conversation with Mohit, right? We're very different individuals and please treat us differently. And the second thing we did was on addressing what do you do if there's a disagreement between the two. We laid down very clearly saying that even if there's a disagreement in a common room of discussion, eventually the decision is of the person who leads that particular team, right? So the argument is not really between me and Mohit, but the argument is between me and my marketing head. It's between him and the finance head, right? On topics. Like, that's the real conversation to be had. And let's look at it differently, because it's not a husband-wife couple running the business.
Yeah.
It is our job to enable all of you to do what you are good at and what you can really do well for, right? So we addressed it very early on. And that, I think, kind of helped the team. But this, like, they took almost about a month and a half. And I don't think these guys would have been able to have the conversation, but they were comfortable having the conversation with an HR. And the HR brought it to us.
Yeah. Got it. Awesome. I think this has been super interesting. I think we've covered this wide ambit of things. Before we end, I think that's the pressing question that everybody would like to know. What's next? What's going to happen after this entire phenomenal journey, which has been largely successful? Created a very significant brand which is out there, and now you are taking time off. But what's going to come next? We know the content piece, so that's something that I personally am very excited about. I know many others in the ecosystem are, but any insights to or secrets to spill here?
No, not really. Actually, we're looking at a couple of ideas. I want to do a company again. I don't think I've had my enough share. I want to do it again. So we're still thinking of a set of ideas, but as I said, right, that the ability to take risk is led by multiple factors for decisions. So I think it might take longer than we thought it would. In the meantime, I think I'm beginning to spend a lot of time with founders on people who are reaching out to help them who are stuck at any given point of time for whatever decision. Like, my next meeting is with someone who needs help with running the business at this point of time, right? So
nice.
I think you're doing a lot of mentoring work.
Got it.
A lot of investments that Mohit has made in. So we're spending a lot of time with our invested companies as and when to have conversations, to figure out what stage of business they are in and if they need any help. So broadly that, till we figure out what's that next idea that can take the sleep off for us.
No, I'm very excited that the next 25, 30 years of India coincide with the next 25, 30 years of my career, of my working life. So I think need to figure out for myself how we get those two to sync up well. Most likely somewhere in the investing space, but I don't know that 100% answer yet. So for now, trying our hand at it, we'll start a syndicate soon. So that's the space. And yeah, other than that, just catching up for lost time with holidays and spending time with the kids. At least until they become teenagers and get sick of us. So using that time well.
Yeah. Awesome. No, that's lovely to know. Thank you so much, Mallika and Mohit. This has been such a pleasure. I think this has been a very refreshing conversation where we've, you know, gone in many different directions and covered so many different parts. But the ones that really stuck to me are the absolute candid nature of how you share your lessons and how deep and meaningful they are. So I think that's something I'm definitely going to take back. Thank you so much for being on the show. This was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.